seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, Golf Weekly friends. We are back. Rory McIlroy just won the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill. It is all kicking off with the Masters around the corner. Very exciting times, Nathan Murphy.
Yes.
With me and Nathan Murphy today is the Director of Golf at Luttrellstown, Peter Lawrie. Hello.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Would you agree these are exciting times in golf, Peter?
They certainly are.
Yeah.
Isn't it great to watch a tournament with, say, Tiger back in the mix? You know, Rory winning.
Who are you up for?
Oh, I was up for Rory big time. But I would have liked to seen Tiger, you know,
push him
a little bit at the end.
Yeah, it was fantastic stuff. Now, we have a lot going on, so a few bits of housekeeping before we get to your tweets. We will be recording a special pod tomorrow. Brian O'Driscoll with us tomorrow. All the stars are coming out, Peter.
Wow.
Yeah, we're doing a short game clinic at the Peltz School in Killeen.
Very good.
So we'll record some tips and do a few bits there. And we have a big announcement concerning Luttrellstown in a moment, but there was a huge interest, Nathan.
Massive.
In our competition last week.
Four ball for Mount Juliet.
Yeah.
Who was close to the pin?
Yeah.
Now, technically...
Technically, the answer was no one.
Technically, it was me, because my ball travelled closest to the pin. The fact that it landed in water, yeah, means that technically, Jer won.
Yeah.
Anybody who tried to ram it home with an added comment about my swing... instantly ruled out of the competition, just
sure.
So that people know this for future reference.
just for
if you abuse me, yeah. I am picking the winner and I'm not picking you.
Nathan does pick the winner here, so don't abuse him.
The winner is Dan Holden. Well done.
Oh, Dan.
At Dan Holden 24.
Okay, well done, Dan.
Well done, Dan.
Who correctly guessed that Jer was closest to pin. So you get a four ball at Mount Juliet. Go. Yeah. Enjoy
just
that.
Just 80 yards away from that pin. Won the competition that day. So that's housekeeping.
There's a bit more housekeeping I think we need to acknowledge here.
Keep it going, Nathan.
What
about Ron Burgundy right here, who TV persona Joe Malloy, perfectly coiffured hair on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. What the hell is going on right now?
I just went for a swim.
There's an extra bounce. Extra level of bounce there that I've never seen before.
Just gone for a swim, and I have to say, I do look shocking. Out of control. Unkept. Mm. So, that's housekeeping business number two in my hair. Number three is Luttrellstown.
Yes.
So, people will fondly remember last year at the Masters, we had a great day where there was a round of golf for listeners, and then we had a little Masters preview.
We had a great day.
Damien McGrain stole
with Michael
the show,
Hoey.
Can I say?
Yes.
Stole the show.
Damien always says, I'm going to try. Damien, if you're listening, I'll be on the phone to you very shortly.
So what's the plan? We're doing it again.
Yes. The golf week. If I got to perfect my... You can give me some tips on perfecting
on
my reading to camera.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you've got a...
Millions.
You've got an auto cue there. I have to read off my iPhone.
And there's 1.3 million in that camera. Go.
Oh, well, I'm not playing, Joe, so it's not 1.3 million.
Okay, average, 960.
Right. The Golf Weekly and Off the Ball Masters preview day is back, Joe. It is back. Mm-hmm. Once again, we're warming up for the opening major of the year at Luttrellstown Castle Golf Club in Dublin on Wednesday, April 4th.
Yeah.
What a lovely golf club it is. The day will include 18 holes of golf at Luttrellstown Castle Golf Club, followed by some food, and followed by a live Off the Ball Masters preview in the clubhouse with some of Ireland's top golfers.
Excellent.
So pretty much the exact same as what we did last year.
Which was fine.
Which was great.
Yeah.
So everyone who enters is also going to get put in a draw to win a year's membership at Luttrellstown.
Wow.
Now that is, just for clarity, and we should have cleared this up last year, not exchangeable for anything else. You can't say, I don't want the membership, give me the cash instead.
Did someone say that last year?
Yes.
Where was that person from?
I could not tell you on live on the radio.
Not Dublin.
I can't tell you.
Oh my goodness. Shocking.
Shocking. So you're getting the membership and that's it.
Right, okay.
No correspondence. No correspondence will be entered into at all.
Yeah.
I think it's on the New Stock website.
Can I ask this question? Can they gift the membership to, if they were down in Cork and they had a lovely uncle in Dublin, could they gift the membership?
Yes, they can. Do you know it's the best parkland in Dublin?
Is that official Golf
official?
Digest?
That's Irish Golfer magazine.
Wow. What's number two?
Haven't a clue.
Is it really number one? Yeah.
Yeah.
Parkland. Wow.
Parkland in Dublin.
Okay, so that's a great day. Last year, from memory, we had a ton of people who wanted to come. This is the day before the Masters, the Wednesday.
This is the Wednesday, okay. The day before the Masters.
Some say this is bigger than the par three.
Last year, it most definitely was.
last year we had a lot of people wanting to come. We couldn't facilitate everyone. So how many can we get out in course?
So we are going to give away 15 two balls on Golf Weekly.
1-5.
1-5. So for you and a mate. Actually, our Golf Weekly listeners are great because they will generally come back and say, listen, my mate can't make it.
Oh, yeah.
Give it to somebody else. So if your mate can't make it, do let us know.
Yeah, we'll
fill
magic.
Up the round. Whereas the off-the-ball winners, they just don't turn up if they don't want to come, which is very upsetting.
How many are we giving away in total?
I think we're giving away about 30.
We're giving away 60 people.
60
people. 60 individuals.
So
yeah. To get people right. 60
we're giving
individuals.
Away 15 yeah. for Golf Weekly, okay. And any extra that we have, we'll fill back with Golf Weekly listeners. Just tell us who the director of golf is at Luttrellstown. Could be anybody.
Okay.
Could be anybody. Tweet your answer to @GolfWeeklyOTB and @LuttrellstownGC.
You have to include both.
In include both, just as it was with the competition last week. There will be more chances to win, Joe, on off the ball and OTBAM.
So we're giving away 15 pairs.
15 pairs.
So 30 yeah. places here.
Yes.
Okay. And if somebody is good enough to just want to come on their own, we can try and make
we
that
can,
work.
We'll squeeze somebody in. Else in. And
to be honest, I want a lot more Golf Week listeners there than off the ball chumps.
What we might do as well is next week when we know numbers, we will put the invitation out to come just for the evening if you want. So, because obviously a lot of people on a Wednesday afternoon can't play, but yeah. they might want to come to the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Sit, listen to Damien McGrain. Maybe yeah. get Michael Hoey to do a few impressions.
Yeah, he was very good last year.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, great. That?
I think that's that.
For the time
it's going to be great.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so let's get to some of the tweets then.
You have them.
Martin Shoga says, Phil's back, Tiger's back, Rory's back. Last week I said that had to be two of the best weeks in a row on the PGA Tour in some time, but that is now an incredible 3 weeks in a row. Golf is great, says somebody. When is the Rory McIlroy pod this week, lads? Don't make me do it, .. And he had a picture of a rival podcast. And not a good one.
Oof, oof. You gonna name it then?
No. Just listening to the pod on the way back from Twickenham, could you have Dermot Galise on every week? By the way, you don't have to stop in second gear. You can stop in any gear. I'm a driving instructor, says Brian. Looking forward to getting a chance to play in your next outing. I think you do have to stop in second gear. I did a driving test. This is, won't bore you with the details,
motorbike.
Peter.
On your motorbike?
Yeah.
Right. Wouldn't have a clue.
Took up half last week's pod.
Actually, one of my members told me that. They asked me the question, Peter, why weren't you on the pod? And I says, oh, I was dumped. Don't worry about it. Not
we're
for the
dumped.
First time.
We weren't going to drag you in because it was going to be
anyway,
very short.
But then they gave out about Joe talking about his motorbike.
Well, I won't do any more then. Anthony O'Connell had a picture of lots of empty wine glasses saying, shite, I drank all of that watching the golf. Suddenly donned on. Rory's amazing finish is worth an emergency pod, says Richard Kennedy. Who then adds 5 birdies in the last 6 holes. That's how to win a tournament. When the putter is working, he is the best in the world. Anthony O'Connell then says, not the nicest of tweets.
Oh.
I've made a mess in my pants thinking about the Masters already. It's illegal how good it could be. Right. Oh, dear.
Do you have this awful fear that Charlie Hoffman is going to win the Masters?
It's a big concern.
No chance.
I don't think he's qualified yet, but
it's a big concern that Rory and Tiger missed the cut and we're sitting there on Friday night thinking, no.
Yeah, Tiger hits it off the tee out of bounds 3 times and Rory has 38 putts.
Yeah. Pels Golf Europe, where we're going tomorrow. Brian there wonders, big question now, and this is the big question, we'll put it to you in a few moments, Peter. Is the putting work Rory did with Faxon a band-aid or is it a lasting improvement? Only time will tell. Emmett Keane says, it's now an astonishing thing to think that Irish golf fans are now thinking, oh right, I suppose I support Rory again now.
Wow, yeah, you don't want to make a comment about Rory on Twitter.
Why?
Non-stop. Why do you care he's not Irish?
Oh, really?
He's not Irish. Maybe you should hand back the money to the GUI that they gave him down the years and they should give it to an Irish person. I made the point that it was the first time an Irish player had won on St. Patrick's weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a lot of, he's not Irish.
Right.
Very angry, and then got that the worst part of Twitter, where other people are having a spat around you, and you're stuck.
Tagged in, yeah, and it goes on forever.
Yes,
and then Adrian Bain finally. This is a good one, actually. Malky Clerken tweeted about this as well the other week from the Irish Times. Never be bored again on a flight or bus or at an airport because at the Masters, as in the Masters, have released the past 50 years of final rounds, and it's on YouTube.
I saw that. That's unbelievable. Mm.
God bless them.
Yeah, to go back to some of them.
Instantly I thought I'm going to go back and watch the full Nicholas Faldo 96. That's what jumped to my mind.
Yeah.
Where are you going to go?
you know, if you're being really mean, you'd like to see the Norman Faldo one.
That's like, what you just said.
No, you said Nicholas.
Sorry. Norman Faldo, 96.
Sorry.
That's the one I thought of too.
Okay, that's the first one that I'd go back to.
Are we all just, what's wrong with us?
Then the next one I'd go back to Nicholas winning, which was 86, was it?
Mm. Oh, yeah. His last one. Yeah. You can skip the front nine there as well. It's all about the back nine.
It's all about really the shot he hit into 15 and the shot he hit into 16 when he turned to the sun to say, you know, the sun's saying, be good. And he looked at him and he went, it is good.
Yeah. Amazing.
05.
That's Tiger's last win.
Chipping in.
And 16. Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched 97 ever since 97. You know, I like this kid, this 21-year-old kid lapping the field. I've
seen bits of it again. Because one of the great things about the new Sky Golf Channel is there's endless repeats of glorious days in golf. Mm. It's a brilliant idea, though.
I might go back and watch it.
I have 4 young kids, so I don't get a chance to watch those.
I rarely see it either, unfortunately. Yeah. But
I kind of feel I should go back and watch. Will Hogan sneak into that the past 50 years?
No.
Let's check. I feel like I should really go back and watch Nicholas and Palmer. And I'm very curious about the general standard of golf in the 60s.
Is it a full 6-hour package?
I think so. I don't think it's like some edited, here's an hour of the highlights. I think it's like the final round as it was broadcast. And I'm very curious, the standard of golf. We hear now the fields are deeper than ever.
Yeah.
Here's something approaching some kind of proof, I guess, even just to the naked eye.
Well, you're going to see definitely they're hitting a far more longer shots into greens. The greens are that little bit slower back then, a little bit more receptive. But yes, I'd agree with you. It'll be amazing to watch. Mm. The other one that springs to mind is the Mickelson shot from the pine straw when he won it 6-iron on 13. Like those shots just...
Iconic.
Are iconic is right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, enjoy that. Tweet us in if you find a good one. That we're not thinking of. So let's turn to review the week. I should mention, God, we will bring you Paul McGinley on this podcast and Butch Harmon.
Just how we roll.
They were on Off the Ball across the week. McGinley was on last night, was really good. And Butch Harmon was on Sunday.
Sunday, yeah. Okay. He was great.
Was he, yeah?
Yeah.
What are we looking forward to there?
Well, we spoke a little bit about the final round where he predicted that Rory would win. Uh-huh. He said, I've just seen enough. I think he's just going to reel these guys in. Spoke a lot about Tiger and... He seems to feel, I think Tiger's going to go to Augusta and contend. Mm. I didn't think I'd be saying that, but yeah.
Wow.
Butch doesn't like to talk about Tiger for the full interview, but his answers on Tiger are of such length that actually answers everything you would want to ask him about Tiger.
Okay, great. Well, that is on the way, and Paul McGinley's on the way. So let's talk Rory McIlroy, who, as I put to Paul McGinley, Peter, he was number one in strokes gained putting. But the really interesting thing is he shot a 64 on the Sunday. He called it a near perfect round. For the first time since they started keeping the strokes gained stats in 04 on PGA Tour history, we had someone, Rory McIlroy, who was number one strokes gained putting, number one driving distance, number one proximity to the hole, and number one scrambling. So that's a pretty good combo. No one's ever been number one in all of those things.
I think you're going to win the tournament. if you,
the only surprise is he didn't win by more when you look at that.
Yeah. So the putting is the big talking point. Statistically, and even just to the naked eye, people are saying it's as good, if not his best, putting performance ever. And Brad Faxon, little old Brad Faxon is the man to thank, it seems.
It just looked far more natural. I think the last time I was in here, I was talking about, you know, if somebody could show Rory footage of Steve Stricker or Tiger Woods putting in their heyday, their stroke was far more fluid. It was soft. It was instinctive. And you know, Rory went to Brad Faxon, or Brad Faxon went to Rory.
Seems they bumped into each other almost by just randomness at the Bears Club, because Rory had missed the cut that weekend.
Okay,
you're not so sure.
I think he was very well managed. Rory was.
Are we saying like he was almost Rory? Why don't you go to the club there and let's see who you bump into?
Well, I am not saying that categorically happened, but
is that almost a political maneuver, because he's still working, I think, officially with Phil Kenyon, and I saw Phil Kenyon still getting credit for what he was doing on Sunday, that you don't want to go out and go,
No, he's
his own boss. I think
Rory is very much his own man. And look, you know, my friendship with Rory goes back a long way. He's a really nice guy. But what I would say, he's very headstrong and he does things his way. Mm. And when you're that way, it's very hard to kind of say, look, is there something wrong with my putting? Where am I going here?
So theoretically, saying to Rory, you should talk to someone about your putting and you should go and talk to Brad Faxon, that theoretically would be a bad approach.
Correct.
He may not have met Brad Faxon if that had happened.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's why I was saying maybe just show him footage of these people to kind of, because Rory's such an instinctive player and plays on feel and everything about him is natural.
Yeah.
When he sees something, he'll be able to do it rather than being shown something.
Well, one way or another, he met Brad Faxon at the Bears Club. They spent about 2 hours together, and Faxon, I think, in a way that Dave Stockton was happy to do, was reluctant to take credit totally, and he let Rory do the talking, and then he was asked about it. But the gist of what both of them seem to be saying is it wasn't an overly technical conversation. It really did boil down to just look at the hole and kind of roll it towards it.
Correct, yeah. Like Brad Faxon has worked with, I remember reading it, the psychologist that worked with Harrington, Bob Rotella. And it's kind of similar to that, you know, when you get up to it, you know, you forget about everything else. You're just trying to get this little white ball into that hole there and, you know, show me how you're going to do it.
But Nathan, remember at the Irish Open with Matsuyama and Ram?
Well, I think we both brought this up over the last couple of days of how much time he spent away from the other two players, almost bordering on being rude, totally ignoring what they were doing and practicing his technique again and trying to discover something in the middle of a round, which led to questions, I think, of, well, why does he need to do it in the middle of a round? Yeah. Spend 3 hours after you're finished playing and figure it out there. But it seems from what's been coming out of McIlroy and Brad Faxon that it was a very simple message, one of which was like, it's one shot, move on. If you miss, move on, it's fine. Mm. Send the second one in. Don't let it linger. The other one, what I think Faxon asked them, what are you thinking about when you stand up in the tee box? Nothing. Mm. Well, that's where you need to get to. So if he hits a bad tee shot, it's fine because he knows he's going to hit the next one well. Whereas it did seem, and this is probably going back 18 months, probably through this entire dip, that his putting was affecting everything else. Like his iron play had definitely gone backwards. Probably you would have to think because he was putting so much pressure on himself to get it close because he didn't think he was going to hold a putt. Mm.
I totally agree with you. When you're not holding putts, it goes through your whole game. You know, you can drive as well as you can. You can hit your iron shots in, but if you have it in your head that you're not going to hold putts, you know, you're going to struggle. Mm. And it happened to Tom Watson many, many years ago. You know, he was a brilliant iron player, brilliant, you know, from tee to green. He was excellent. When he started missing putts, it went through his whole game.
Yeah. There's an interesting point coming up in Paul McGinley's chat on his wedge play. You mentioned his wedge play there. So, like, we're still occasionally seeing Rory miss some greens here. And that's kind of interesting. And McGinley, I think he made the point to you and Off the Ball a couple of months ago as well. But he was comparing him with Spieth or with Dustin Johnson, effectively. And he was saying that, Rory always gets a lot of speed because he's releasing the club through the ball a lot, you know. And you think of Johnson, who'll almost lock his hand and turn his body through it, and Spieth with his chicken wing. They have less going on in the club face through the ball with the wedges. And he was saying he'd love to see Rory do that, adopt that, have less release going on through the ball, which I thought was a very interesting technical point on his wedges.
He needs to drastically improve his wedges.
Drastically?
Drastically.
Okay.
Like, what got Dustin Johnson to number one in the world was his wedge play. Mm. You know, he was phenomenal striker of the ball, hits it miles. But if you watch probably a year to year and a half ago, when he came out of his sabbatical that he had, that he was, he came back out and his wedge play was brilliant. And, you know, he got to world number one, you know, won all around him.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, watching the shot that Rory hit into 16, you know, he hit a brilliant drive down 16 on Sunday.
377 yards.
Yeah. And he was frightened about spinning it in the water.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's only hitting wedge into that hole.
Did you release the club through your wedges? Or did you try and keep that club face fairly...
Depending on what kind of shot I was trying to play, yes. Yeah.
And do you see what do you see Rory doing? Is he doing too much with the club face? Is that the issue?
I don't think he's dialed in his numbers in relation to how far he hits it.
Okay.
And it's always difficult when, you know, you're hitting a 377 off the tee and then you come down to a wedge, you know, how far is my wedge going?
Mm.
Like you look at, I suppose, the best one of the best wedge players out there was Luke Donald. You know, and he released through the ball.
Right.
But he knew exactly how far each wedge was going. And he worked with the football that Porrick worked with as well. Or sorry, the rugby coach.
Dave Allard.
Well done. And, you know, his game really, really improved. That's how he got to number one, was his wedge play.
Okay. So it's not necessarily a barrier that you might be releasing through the ball.
No. It's all about distance control.
Yeah. But is it easier to get more consistent doing less with the club face through a ball? I'm almost asking from the perspective of an amateur. Like I look at Jordan Spieth's chicken wing and I think maybe that's what I should be doing instead of flipping my hands through a ball.
No, release gets you kind of more spin, more control. If you're not releasing it, like Dustin probably struggles to release it because he's got so much club head speed. And he spins it quite a lot, so he's probably trying to reduce his amount of spin.
Okay.
Spieth just plays that way, but if you look at a lot of other players, you know, they all release their wedges because they're trying to spin them.
Okay, fair enough. So I won't.
I wouldn't look into that one too much. No,
you've saved me 6 months down that dark hole.
There you go.
So somebody did ask, and I think it is the key question: is the putting work Rory did with the facts in a band-aid, or can we hope for some kind of lasting improvement, or is it too soon to tell?
No, I think you could see a lasting improvement.
Right.
I think, you know, a win, confidence is massive.
Mm.
And now he's kind of got a method in his head that, you know, he thinks now he can hold everything. And once you think that, you're going to run with it for a while. So I could see him definitely getting to the semis final of this match play this week.
Mm.
I think he'd be unlucky to get beaten at all, and then moving on then to Augusta. So
great.
I'd have high hopes for him.
It's hard to see him having that good a putting week again. Like, that was bordering on freakish, just how far ahead of everybody else he was and how far ahead of anything he had done previously on the PGA Tour. I think it was plus 2.5 strokes gained putting. His previous was plus 1.8 1.9. So this was out of his skin good. But as we've touched on before, he doesn't need to be that good every week. He just needs to be a good bit better than he was.
Yeah. And what about Tiger then?
Tiger, I was delighted to see playing well. He's still struggling with the driver. Like, that tee shot he hit on 16 was, you know, in comparison to what Rory and Justin Rose, where they hit it on 16, like a lot of people said, he could have hit 3 wood off the tee, but then, like, he's going into the green with a 6 iron, where the lads are going in with wedges, 9 irons.
Mm.
And this is what I worry about Tiger, and I said it from day one. He is back. He's definitely, you know, he has the juices back. He has the putting. He has the chipping. He has the iron play. He's got the, you know, as they say, the flair to hit that shot that he did on 16 on Saturday out of the bunker. I just worry when he gets the driver in his hand.
He did say that he had a couple of weeks break now and he was going to tinker. He was going to make some alterations. So maybe he had so much going on over the past couple of months that he sort of thought, actually, I can kind of trust this.
He did say, he implied that certainly, that he knew it wasn't good enough, the driving, but he was playing back-to-back weeks. He said it wasn't the time. So now he has a bit of a gap. The plan is... And I don't know who these friends are whose eyes he's trusting here and there, but effectively he's on his own.
Nota Begay is definitely one of them, yeah.
So it seems now, the next fortnight, he'll look at his driving, and if he can magic up something there, then we're on.
I think he'll talk to Mark O'Meara and Fred Couples, some of the best drivers of the ball that's been out there.
Fred Couples is my favourite swing, I think, by the way.
By far, yeah. By far.
I'm going to watch the Masters 92. Yeah, it's just hit me there.
But Mark O'Meara hit it very straight.
Did he?
No,
yeah.
Didn't hit it very long.
No.
Okay. But, you know, it's going to be difficult for Tiger to win golf tournaments if he's not long and straight, because all these other kids are long and straight.
Jeez, he's not far away at the moment, though.
He's tied for the lead with 2-3 holes left.
Even a small improvement he's on.
Yeah.
That's what he's got to be looking at. Like, all it takes is that
somebody said to me they're going to bet on Tiger, yeah, right? I think they got him at 20-1, right? Unbelievable.
He's about
price.
Tens
he's
now.
About tens now. Yeah. And my question was, he's tied for the lead. He's playing the 72nd hole. Mm-hmm. What does he hit off the tee?
3-wood. Just get near that bunker and then knock it up there. Makes his par, wins.
No, I said he's tied for the lead.
Tied for the lead.
Tied for the lead.
Makes his par and banks on his buddy not making a birdie.
I don't know. I don't know.
Can he not nudge it up towards that bunker? If he's feeling good, he can give himself a birdie chance.
Yeah, but he's hitting what? From that bunker, he's probably hitting 7-6 iron yeah, into the green.
Yeah.
While some of the lads are hitting 8 irons into the green.
I'm backing him. At 20s, I'll take him.
Okay.
How he's recovered physically is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Watching that tee shot on 16, the one that went out of bounds, looking at it going, he's got to have hurt himself there.
Yeah. Actually, sorry, just a thought. The other thing is, strange things happen under pressure. Like, the key thing is pressure, because if you think back to last year, who would have banked on Justin Rose going into the trees on the final hole? It was either in the playoff or it was in the 18th. My memory is not quite. But remember, Rose put himself in all sorts of trouble.
Yeah, it was a playoff, wasn't
yeah,
it?
So, yeah. So, like, he would be, if you were to give me the example of worst case scenario for Tiger, yeah, you'd say, how's he going to do against Justin Rose? And the other, the intangible is what pressure does, and Tiger has handled pressure.
He certainly has, and you know, he's got himself into a position now probably which he didn't expect. Like, he's challenged for two tournaments in a row.
Yeah, he said he hadn't expected this at all.
And you know, there's a lot goes through your head when you're in contention, and it takes a lot out of you. And I think he's doing well now to take a few weeks off before the Masters. And you know, like you said, if he can get the driver somewhat straighter with a shape, I think, you know, he'll be a strong contender for the Masters.
What do you think his mentality was on the 16th tee, and also then following on when he doesn't win a tournament from the last couple of weeks? Is that where he now has an extra edge on everybody else as well? So on 16, is he thinking par 5, could have hit a 3-wood, could have got up and knocked it up for birdie, or actually thinking, yeah, second place here is no good to me, I'm going all out, I couldn't care less if I come 5th?
No, he didn't care. No, he was looking to win. Like, what does 5th mean to Tiger Woods in any kind of tournament?
Changes his legacy, no?
Nah, yeah. Like, finishing 5th to somebody like myself or whatever is remarkable. But when you're Tiger Woods, no chance. You know what I mean? He was thinking about winning the tournament. And hence, I was actually delighted to see him hit driver off 16, because he could have bailed out and could have hit 3-wood down the fairway and could have hit 6-iron on the green.
Because he did at the Valspar, he bailed out on the 18th.
Yeah.
Left himself miles back. Bizarre. He just held a 45-footer. He should have been pumped.
Of course he should have, yeah.
That's why I'm really looking forward to, if he's anywhere near contention on the Sunday in the Masters, 13 and 15, and what he does and how many risks he takes on that back nine, and tries to get that Tiger Roar mentality into the opposition's head, into the guys he's going up against.
I don't think there is a Tiger Roar anymore, to be honest with you. Like, look at, you know, he was doing well last week. Was anybody affected by it? You
that's
know,
a fair point. Yeah.
You know, Rory was making birdies left, right, and centre. So was Dustin Johnson.
Yeah, it wasn't. No. You didn't get the sense anyone was looking over their shoulder.
No,
overly. Let's talk match play in a few minutes. But I just want to, seeing as we're on topic here, bring the people, Butch and Paul McGinley. So Paul McGinley joined us on Off the Ball last night, and I first put those stats to him that we mentioned, that Rory was number one in strokes gained putting, in scrambling, in proximity to the hole, and in driving. So all in all, Paul McGinley, a bloody good performance.
Yeah, I only saw clips of it. I saw a bit on social media. I was traveling. But yeah, I mean, it kind of everything clicked. You know, he's been talking all year about things haven't clicked, and they certainly did on Sunday. I mean, what a way to finish. That's going to give him a huge amount of confidence. You know, we all know how good his long game is from tee to green. A lot of question marks over his putting, a lot of work being done on his putting. And now to see it kind of evidenced there, and I think that was his best putting performance ever since he turned professional, and that's pretty impressive.
What do you see with his putting generally? We can talk about the specifics of the week just gone, but generally.
Well, I mean, I'm very much, you know, is it an art, is a scientist? Is it an art or is it a science? And I think the science, personally, I think the science is about 20%. And then it's 80% feel and instinct and touch and confidence. Jack Nicklaus used to say it's 90% of that and 2%. Of technique. So I'd be very much along those lines. Rory is a very he's a very charismatic player in terms of how he plays. He doesn't play with he doesn't play golf in a scientific way, the way somebody like, say, Justin Rose would. So what we had seen from Rory so far this year was him trying to be a scientist on the green, an artist from tee to green, and then get around the greens and trying to be a bit of a scientist. And I think he's taken that, not saying it's bad, but he's taken that structures that he's put in place from a science point of view and then added in the freedom that he obviously got. I think Brad Faxon was a huge influence last week, and he certainly wouldn't have won the tournament without spending those 2 or 3 hours that he did with him on the Monday.
Yeah, it's funny how life works, isn't it? Because it seems he was at the Bears Club in Florida, and that's where he bumped into Faxon. I suppose, like any of us might do, chatting around the putting green, and they seem to get talking. Faxon was on the tour for many years and regarded as an excellent putter. It seems that the gist of the conversation, they hung out for about 2 hours, but the gist of the conversation, according to McIlroy, was to free up, to stop worrying too much about mechanics. I used a lot of visualization, and that's all I really tried to do this week. He said he just kind of focused on rolling the ball towards the hole, as simple as that sounds. Faxon, have you come across him? Did you ever play with him? How good a putter was he?
Yeah, I've played quite a bit with him. A super nice guy as well. And he's a very instinctive putter. If you watch how he puts, it's a very simple action. He used the old Ping My Day putter, those who might remember, with the big long toe on it. He puts very quickly. So his last look at the hole, as he comes back, as his eyes go back to the ball, immediately the putter head starts to move. So he doesn't have time for, you know, I need to do this, I need to keep the left wrist this, I need to do that. He likes to be, that's what he means about being an instinctive putter. Mm. And he does a lot of drills along that. And I'm sure that's kind of stuff that he did with Rory. I haven't spoke to Rory about what happened. I've just been reading it in the paper, but I'm sure that's what they did. And it was about having fun, you know, like kids, when your kids are in a putting green, having fun and having big breaks on them and aiming over there and seeing how the ball rolls and how it works, and getting out of your mind of being a scientist and into your mind of being an artist. And that's when Rory's at his best, when he is an artist and also when he's inspired. Mm. And both of those things collided very strongly last week. And I think Tiger Woods had a very big influence in terms of him being inspired.
Mm. It's interesting you mentioned the Faxon's eyes and what a quick putter he is, because they also mentioned a trigger, whatever it might be, just to get the putt started, as opposed to standing over the thing for too long.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, anybody who's played golf, I mean, the worst thing, standing over the ball, is what do I do now? Mm. And you've got 10 things going through your head. You're never going to play golf, good golf, with that mindset. And if you look at the players who play really well, particularly over a period of time, you know, you look at the Trevinos and even Nicklaus, you know, okay, he stood over the ball for quite a while, but once he did that forward press, and he twitched his head to the right-hand side, it was gone. Mm. You know, even Justin Rose has got to work on that hard. That's something that he struggles with, because he likes to be a scientist and everything has to be perfect. So you've got to get that blend. As a professional golfer, you've got to get that blend between the science and the art. And what happens, all of us, and I can say this from experience, is generally when things go wrong, we head down the road of being a scientist rather than being the artist. Mm. And it takes somebody around you, somebody within your team, or something to happen to pull you away from that scientific thing and back into that artistic mindset, because that's when we all play our best.
Yeah, even at the Irish Open last summer, we followed him around for one round. Obviously not something we get to do very often, because he doesn't play in Ireland naturally every week. And he was with Ram and Matsuyama for the round I was following him. And whilst they were off putting and doing their business, and Rory was waiting for his turn, he was off at the corner of the green quite often for a number of holes in his own world, and just repeatedly practicing his putting stroke over and over again. This, you know, this kind of, what, this 2 foot stroke less. And you think, well, like, that's not the issue here, you know. And people around that time are wondering, is he reading greens well enough as well? And there are always plenty of theories with Rory, and not least when it comes to his putting. But I remember thinking, that just can't be good.
No, and you're right, Joe. You're right about that. And I bet you he wasn't doing that last week. I didn't see it, but I bet you he wasn't spending a lot of time doing that. But I think the big thing with Rory is, and both of them are blended here, the big thing is when he's inspired, and when his heart is engaged. And that's the big thing with Rory. You know, I see him as you know, I often use the phrase, he's the brightest kid in the class, but he's a tendency to kind of daydream every now and again. And that's where he is. He's he's the best player in my opinion, in terms of how he plays the game, but his concentration levels are not matched, and that's why he hasn't, in my view, had the record of Tiger Woods yet. Now, if he can improve that mental set where he's really inspired, he's really into what he's doing, and he really is into what makes him tick the best, that's when you're going to see him winning major championships again and dominating the way that you know everybody in the game thinks he should do because of the game that he has.
He was 124th in the putting strokes gained statistics going into the Arnold Palmer at the start of the week, and obviously came out top of the class the week just gone by. I presume the rest of his game is just so bloody good. He doesn't even need to be first strokes game putting most weeks to win a tournament. I dare say he could probably be top 20 and being with a great shot of winning most tournaments.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if you look at his stats last week, actually, the first 2 days, he didn't play particularly well. His putting bailed him out. His putting kept him within touching distance. And then his game came around over the weekend. And then it all kind of collided. And that's where he was. Mm. He ran off into the sunset. Yeah, his game is very good. But again, going back to the inspiration, going back to momentum in the game that we all talk about so much, you know, when your putting is off, it puts so much pressure on the rest of your game. And I think that's what we've seen from Rory this year. You know, his wedge play hasn't been good. I've been watching that closely. It hasn't been good. He's been missing green with wedges. I mean, even last week, he missed it with a short iron going into 15 there. Fortunately, he was able to chip in and keep the momentum going and off and running. But that potentially there was a big mistake, but he got away with it because the short game bailed him out. They're the kind of things, being on the money, you know, and we keep going back to a reference of Tiger Woods when he was at his best and, you know, being lucky to play a lot with Tiger when he was at his very peak. That's what he did. He was relentless. There was no let up. There was never an unforced error at the wrong time.
Yeah.
You know, when it was just that relentlessness of it. It wasn't that it was absolutely awe-inspiring every shot he hit, but there was a relentlessness in the consistency of how he approached the game and how he played. Now, I don't think... As a personality, Rory is kind of not that way inclined.
Yeah.
So that's what also makes him so exciting to watch. Because he's not that way inclined, because he is the brightest kid in the class, and he does fall asleep a little bit, but that's what makes him so intriguing, is that he goes off and then he goes on. He goes off and then he goes on. And consistency is probably not something we're going to see a whole lot from Rory. We haven't seen a lot of it in his career, and we probably won't going forward. But at the same time, that makes him so appealing to watch, and that's why he's so charismatic when he plays golf.
That's very interesting, because I know last year obviously there was the injury, the rib injury, for much of the year, and he wasn't able to practice as much as he would have liked. And then, for, you know, in so many years of Rory's career, be it the switch to the Nike clubs or whatever's going on, there is always something, you know, which you kind of think is holding him back in places. And you mentioned the wedge play. Again, that was similar mistakes there last year. You're still seeing them. That's the thing that and you've sort of touched on it when you talk about his inclination and personality, but that is the mad thing. When we're sitting there watching him, and with the driver or with a low iron, he will just blast these shots into oblivion and hit the kind of shots we, you know, amateurs can't even begin to relate to. And then you will watch him with 120 yards into a green and miss the green completely. And you're kind of thinking, how does that even happen?
Personally, I think it's a technical thing. Dustin Johnson is the standard in terms of wedge play. He leads in wedge play in the tour. He has done for a few years. He's awesome how he plays. And I personally think it's because he holds the club through the ball. The ball is not flipped. Rory gets his distance and gets his power because he releases the club quite a lot down the bottom.
Mm.
He's not holding onto it and keeping that club face square through the ball the way Dustin Johnson does. Now, as a result, Dustin Johnson plays with that little baby fade, which is brilliant when it comes to the wedges. He doesn't have flash speed down the bottom. And sometimes Rory has, because he's got so much speed, that flash speed, particularly when you're not swinging very hard, can just get in at the last moment. And it's something to be, you're something you're always aware of, something you're afraid of, that flash speed is going to get in. So you're not playing with the same commitment. And I personally would love to see him play wedge plays like Dustin Johnson, where he's completely not breaking that left arm right through the ball and just kind of holding them off. And I think when he plays his best golf, that's what he does.
I was going to say, sometimes in windy conditions where you see that held off follow through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Invariably, yeah. He finds the green. Like, you can watch Rory on TV now, and if you see the held off, I mean, maybe hard to explain on the radio to people who don't care much about golf, but, you know, the glorious Rory follow through we're all familiar with. But sometimes in windy conditions, the sawn off, held off shot, you almost know before the camera cuts to the green that it's going to be good. I sometimes look at him and think, why doesn't he just actually play with that held off finish all the time? It's very interesting you raise that point.
Yeah, you know, again, the biggest fault that he's got in his game. Remember, he's a very small in stature compared to the other big hitters in the world of golf.
Yeah.
You know, they're all, I mean, Dustin Johnson's, what, 6'3"? I mean, he's an absolute giant when you stand beside him. Well, most guys are a giant beside me. But anyway, Rory is very small. And one of the problems, how Rory creates his power is he's got quite a big drop to the inside from the top of the backswing.
Yeah.
Quite a big drop to the inside. And as I say, then it's a huge release through the ball and great stability. That's what his fitness work is so important. Tremendous stability so that he can really release his arms. Now, that's a great thing in one way. It creates the power, as I say. But the downside of it is that you don't, he's not able to really play that held off shot as much as he does. Having said that, when he plays his best, that's what he does.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing he works on with Michael Bannon, is making sure that drop down, which is great, doesn't become too much. When it becomes too much, now he's got the club underneath him. Now the club's coming from behind him. Now it's coming too much from in to out. Now he's flipping too much down the bottom. Now he's hitting big rope and hooks, and that's when he's at his worst.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I guess as a small guy, he might have generated power by whipping those hands through, and that, you know, it's almost stayed with him. It's pretty hard to break the habit. Like a random hacker like me who will just destroy a golf course, and not in a good way. You know, I look at Jordan Spieth and I think, well, you know, his chicken wing held off thing, that makes a lot of sense for someone like me.
It does, yeah. Not if you're looking for distance, Joe. If you want to get distance, that's a hard,
I just
want
to hit
a hard
straight
way to get distance. Unless you're Dustin Johnson, who's incredibly strong, and that's how he's able to do that.
Yeah.
Through the ball and get the massive power that he does. But yeah, I mean, look, the old saying, you can talk to a fade, but a hook won't listen.
Mm.
You know, and generally you look through all the best players in the history of the game, generally the very, very great ones, the Lee Trevinos, as I say, the Nicklauses, Tiger, you know, there was very little right to left in their shots. If anything, it was a little, the ball always fell to the right-hand side. I remember Nick Faldo played that way, Curtis Strange played that way. You know, the ball went out to a height, and as it was coming down, it would fall to the right. And that's what I playing a lot with Tiger in his when he was at his best.
Right.
That's what it was. There was very little shape on the ball. The ball either fell to the right or it fell to the left when it got to its peak, but it wasn't rounding, if you know what I mean, in towards the flag.
And what did you do as someone who maybe would have, you know, particularly with club technology, looked for more distance? Did you start almost flipping the hands over to try and eke out a few more yards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've no doubt, Joe. I mean, that's a big long story I could talk about, but certainly, you know, I look back to my career kind of sort of 2007, 2008, my game started to not be competitive. You know, I went from kind of being top 10 on the money list down to kind of 40th, 50th, 60th, and then down further. And I look back on it now, and I link it very, very closely to technology. And I link it very, very closely to, you know, the guys coming out. I was with TaylorMade coming out and saying, look, Paul, you need to hit the ball higher to get the most out of these clubs. It needs to be high launch and low spin. Now, I'd never been a high ball hitter. So in order to get the ball going with this new ball that had come out and this new driver technology that came out that everybody was using, you had to be kind of, you know, you had to be hitting the ball up in the air. Mm. That didn't suit my eye. And as a result, like I described a bit with Rory earlier, I started getting the club more and more behind me, more hitting the ball more and more on the upswing and trying to get the ball up in the air. But that was not good technique for me, being a small guy who was a flat swinger.
Mm.
I needed to be more rounded and I needed to be more level in terms of how I threw the ball. And looking back on hindsight, I would have said, you know what, I don't care about this technology. I'm just going to play my game, which is hitting the ball flat and hitting the ball low and try to chase it out there. And certainly the advent in technology helped a lot of guys who were naturally able to hit the ball up high was part of their swing. I think they got a lot more benefit. And it's one of the reasons why you look at guys who swing the club flat. They don't hit the ball a long way.
You need
to have that big high hands if you want to hit the ball a long way. And because now you got to hit it with high launch and low spin.
Yeah. So in short on Rory, you're at the WGC Dell Technologies match play for Sky Sports. You just hope whatever thought process or swing thought in his putting that is, he has, he just rides that for the next couple of weeks. It's still a small enough sample size to just take last week.
Yeah, you know, I remember speaking to a friend of mine last week and he was talking about Rory's putting and I said, you know, Rory be okay putting, because Rory's not very good on Poana greens and he's not very good on grainy greens. You talked earlier about his putting statistics. You know, I saw the same putting statistics. You look at the top 10 performances he's ever had on the on the PGA Tour in terms of putting statistics. They're all East Coast related and they're all pretty much north. The furthest in you go is Ohio. And why that is interesting, Joe, is that they're not grainy greens. They're bent greens and you've got nothing else to worry. You don't have to worry about grain. You don't have to worry about bumpiness. And they're very pure surfaces. Now, when you come to, like, Bay Hill was that last week. He's going to have it here again this week. There's a little bit of grain, but not a huge amount in it. And he's out of the grain now for a while. As the weather gets better, they start moving up the coast and they start going to Poana greens, which are great in the summer, by the way, where the US Open has always played. And he'll be okay in these kind of greens, and he'll certainly be okay in Augusta. The only challenge he's going to have in Augusta is that there's huge slopes in Augusta, and that's where his feel is going to have to come in. I always found Augusta, to be honest, quite easy to put on. The greens are so perfect, so pure, and they're so green that the hole being white looks bigger than it normally is. I think he'll put okay there. The big challenge for him going in is going back to that word again of inspiration and the pressure that's going to be on him to try to complete the Grand Slam. Now that he's put himself very much on the radar, very much part of the conversation, there's going to be a lot of talk about him. He's going to create a lot of media attention. And there's going to be a lot of focus on him achieving this Grand Slam. But you know what? There's a reason why I think only four guys have won the Grand Slam. It's an incredibly difficult thing to do. He's on the threshold of it. And if you want to achieve that, you've got to take all this pressure and kind of embrace it and deal with it and try to come out the other side. There's a reason why, as I say, only four guys have won a Grand Slam.
That's amazingly interesting about the greens. I hadn't actually heard anyone make that point before. So hopefully he's into the sweet spot now. One last point. I would be shocked if I didn't ask you about Tiger Woods, because this is... Well, this is continuing. This feels real. This is it, isn't it?
It looks like it, Joe. I mean, I'm astonished, to be quite honest. I'm absolutely astonished that he can come back at 42 years of age. The big question I always had for him had before he came back was if he was going to... Can Tiger come back was the question this time last year. I said, well, yeah, I can see him coming back, but I can't see him being competitive because he's 42 now and you know, the game has moved on so much. The guys hit the ball so far. I'm absolutely astonished that he has had the highest recorded club speed from anybody on the PGA Tour this year.
And sorry
That's
to interrupt,
astonishing.
He looked like an old man swinging the club on his previous comebacks over the last 24 months. It was like slow motion territory.
Yeah, but it's astonishing at 42 years of age to be able to hit the ball, have more speed than Rory, who's in his prime in terms of age, than Dustin Johnson, who's in his prime in terms of age, and Tony Finau, who's in his prime in terms of age, that Tiger is able to, at 42 years of age, with fusion surgery, being able to swing the club faster than him is quite astonishing. And that's been the foundation of him being competitive. The game now is so much about, despite what people will say, in my opinion, it's so much about hitting the ball a long way. It's a massive, massive, massive advantage. And if you can dominate a golf course the way they do. I mean, look at the way they picked apart those par fives last week. I mean, the 12th hole, for example, I've played in Bay Hill a number of times. I mean, that's a huge par fives. I mean, they're flicking in fairway woods onto it, you know, dancing around, making eagles. 16, I mean, they made 16. Rory hit wedge, flick of a wedge into 16.
Yeah.
You know, that was, for me, was a drive in the five wood.
He drove a 3-7-7.
Good shots over water. Yeah. So to some, you know, for people to say that, driving distance has not moved on and it's not really that important, I just can't take that debate at all. I think that driving, if you forget about the rules at the moment, but if you don't hit the ball a huge distance in the air, you can't be competitive. And Tiger has that. He's come back with that in his armory, and that's what's making him so competitive. Interestingly, the weakest thing we've seen in him so far, which we would gauge to be a strength, is his mental side. You know, I was astonished. Watched him when he came second there to Paul Casey, to see him play the 18th hole so negatively, knowing that he needed a birdie to win or a birdie to get in the playoff. I mean, you had the pin on a little ledge, which you would have known about, and his second shot in there was from the furthest distance of anybody in the field that day.
Yeah,
he hit an iron off the tee and ended up with 195 yard second shot.
You were thinking,
and he hit it down the bottom of the tier.
You were thinking, go for broke here. It's one hole. Go for it.
I was really surprised at that. I mean, Patrick Reed, I think, was two groups ahead of him. And Patrick Reed had 133 in after hitting driver. Now, if he'd 133 with Tiger, you know, Tiger would have certainly had a stand wedge. He would have had a 100-yard shot in if he had a hit driver and hit a good drive down there. So that was quite surprising for me. And it wasn't picked up on in terms of the commentary afterwards. Everybody got caught in with the love-in of he's back and he's number two. He came second and it was great. But I was really, really, really surprised how he played that 18th hole, knowing he needed a birdie to get in the playoff.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. I mean, look, it's so exciting. And the good news for you and everybody at Sky is the whole world is suddenly going to be watching golf over the next month or so because, wow, this is just phenomenal stuff. So thanks so much for your time. I know you're very, very busy. The WGC is on Sky this week. I'm sure people will be tuning into your comments as always. You seem to be really on your game on the commentary at the moment and really enjoying it. It seems like you're kind of, I don't know, you've hit your straps. Are you feeling like you're enjoying it more than ever?
Yeah, you know what? It's like anything. Joe, it's experience, you know, and I'm lucky. I mean, Ewan, for example, is brilliant with me. Ewan is brilliant. You know, he'll critique every session that I do, what was good, what was not good, what we need more of. Right. Yeah, I guess I'm just learning it, and I'm learning how to prep better as well, too. Yeah, it's like anything. The more you do it, you know, you like to learn. I guess, yeah, I'm learning it. I'm enjoying it, but I'll tell you what. Anybody would love to be in the chair that I'm in, sitting commentating, particularly at the moment with so many great narratives going on. You know, you talk about Rory, you talk about John Rahm. I mean, he's going to be a world number one probably by the end of the year, in my opinion. This guy's the best I've seen since Rory. And then, you know, you got Mickelson winning in down a few weeks ago. I mean, it was just so exciting. Yeah. There's so much excitement going on in the game at the moment, and it's you get caught up in it. Even in commentary there, you get caught up in it and you love it. And if you love the game of golf, and you know the guys, it's a buzz. Yeah, it is a buzz. It's nice to see the game reaching a much bigger audience at the moment. I think you're right. The next few weeks, certainly, everybody's going to be tuned in. And the Masters is absolutely set up perfectly. Yeah. You know, the one guy who hasn't shown any form this year, really, other than that, it's a full hand, is Jordan Spieth. And he could well do it this week. This is his hometown in Austin.
Yeah, and seems to come alive at Augusta. Amazing stuff. Listen, enjoy. And again, thank you so much for this evening.
Yeah, you're welcome, Joe. Thank you.
So they were the thoughts of Paul McGinley. We'll finish up with Peter in a few moments talking about the match play. But Butch Harmon was on Sunday, Nathan?
Yeah, this was just before the final round. I think Rory and Tiger were just about to tee off. So we touched on that briefly. As I say, he predicts Rory will go on.
Would you say you and Butch are friends now? Or?
Very much so. Yeah. Dave McIntyre was in the studio. He said he's like the grandfather you'd like to have. Which I thought was, I think, unfortunately, Dave's grandfather's parents have passed away.
Right.
But it ensured a very awkward couple of minutes on radio.
Ridiculous.
Oh, McIntyre, dear.
Butch is,
he's great. You must like Butch on the TV, do you?
He's got
a warmth about him, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. I met him a few times now out on tour with Mickelson and stuff like that. Really nice fellow.
Great. It'd be terrible if Butch was like a Shooter McGavin.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Because they're out there.
Oh, there is certainly are, yeah.
The other thing he'll talk about is Ricky Fowler. So we sort of went through all the main contenders.
Yeah.
Definitely get the sense he still wants to just wrap his arms around Ricky Fowler's neck.
Stop being a Kardashian.
Mm.
So, first question, or are we going to hear your first question?
I'll hear my first question.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, listen, let's get the full Nathan Murphy. Oof. At his brilliance talking to Butch Harmon on Sunday.
With all Tiger's gone through over the last decade, personally, and with his game, and with his struggles with the what seemed to be the chipping yips, and even his struggles in recent months off the tee, just how has he managed to get himself back into a position where 3 weeks out from the Masters, he's the bookie's favourite?
I'll tell you what, it's pretty impressive what he's done. When you look at what's happened to his body, the back surgeries, the not being able to play, he can't even bend over within pain. You watch him now, when you watch him walk, you can see that he's in no pain. You watch him swing, his golf swing looks the best it's looked in, I'd say, 5 or 6 years. He seems to have the juices, competitive juices, flowing again. He's hitting a lot of good shots. He's making a lot of putts. The game of golf has become exciting again, especially with only two more tournaments to go after this one before the Masters. And you're right, even here in Vegas where I live, they have made him the betting favorite, which is kind of a big surprise. But then again, he's Tiger Woods, and you should never say never when it comes to Tiger Woods.
You worked with Tiger when he was at the peak of his powers, and maybe his personality at that stage, he didn't have an awful lot of time for the other players. He was very much his own man. He was solely focused on winning as often and as quickly and as many tournaments as possible. When you look at him now around the golf course, around the driving range, personality-wise, is it a very different Tiger Woods from 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Absolutely. I spent some time with Tiger in San Diego when I was at the Farmers, and he was like his old self. He was fun. He was cracking jokes. He was witty. He was giving everybody a hard time, which is the way Tiger is when he's having a good time. I think, in all honesty, if you look at what he's been through in his life, he's been humbled. He's made some very bad decisions. He's had to live through some tough spots, and I think he's come out on the other side a much better human being and a much better person. The guys say he's a joy to be around now. He's back to giving everybody the needle and having fun. And quite honestly, I think it's very impressive the way his golf game has come around. I was one of the ones who said I didn't think he could ever win again, coming back from back surgery. And now you look at him, I mean, he starts today at Bay Hill, 5 shots back, and it wouldn't surprise you if he went out and shot 64 or 5 and have a chance to win, because he's won there, what, 7 times or so. So it's a golf course he knows. You know, how's he going to do at the Masters? It's anybody's guess how he's going to do, but I will tell you what happened is the joy around golf is back. Tiger Woods drives the needle, as you know, in your country, in our country, and all over the world. TV ratings are up. Golf watching is up. Attendance is up. It's going to make for an incredibly exciting Masters when you consider all the former major champions who are also playing really well at this time.
It couldn't be a better build-up. It's hard to remember a more anticipated Masters, with even what's just happened over the last few weeks, with Mickelson winning, Justin Thomas, Bubba Watson, Jason Day, John Rahm, Dustin Johnson, all winning already in 2018. And that's not even getting into Spieth, who, albeit is having a few struggles with the putter, but Rory, who we were so worried about over the last couple of weeks, back this week. What's been the turnaround with Rory this week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational?
I think for me it's his putting. I think that he's finally making putts again. He seems comfortable. When I watched him yesterday on the tube playing, he looked a little more relaxed on the greens. His stroke looked more consistent as it used to in the past. He's driving the ball beautifully. As we know, he's one of the best drivers in the game. And I think confidence-wise, I think Rory had lost a little confidence, and confidence is a terrible thing. I mean, look at Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth's one of the best putters and great champions we've had in a long time, and he's going through a terrible time of confidence. That's the other thing that is impressive with Tiger, that he's come out to this and he is confident. I think we're going to see Rory have a great chance to win today. He starts only 2 shots back. It's a course where his length can help him if he chooses it. And if he gets off to a good front 9, anything can happen.
Mm. Would you have any worries about Spieth and his putting? He's gone through a 3-year spell where he's holed everything from every part of the green in every second tournament, it feels like. This is the first big dip that he's had to get through. There never seems to have been any questions about his work ethic, and he'll try and drive his way through this. But with your putting in particular, when you lose that, even at a young age, can be very difficult to get it back?
Absolutely. He looks extremely mechanical now. You see him going through all kinds of drills, trying to work on his putting. He's working hard at it. Sometimes you can work too hard at it. Putting is all about feel and starting the ball on the right line and the confidence that you can make the putts. And right now, when we watch Jordan putt, he doesn't look confident over them, especially the short ones, as we've seen him miss so many 2-, 3-, 4 footers with something he never used to miss. And I think it's a confidence thing, and I think he's going to have to get that straight going into Augusta. I don't know if he's playing next week in the match play or the week before the Masters at Houston, but he needs to see something good happen so he can go to Augusta with the confidence. As you know, the last few years, every time he's stepped on the 12th tee, he's had some problems confidence-wise, and now you deal with the putting issues. And Augusta, if you're not putting well, you have no chance, because those greens are extremely difficult.
Rory's putting has obviously been a pretty constant issue over the last couple of seasons, and as you mentioned, he seems to have turned it around this week. There's been reports that he had a word with Brad Faxon ahead of the tournament, and whatever tips and advice he gave him seems to have turned it around. How important a year do you feel this is for Rory? Because he's at a stage where he's probably starting to admit himself he's not going to get to double digits in terms of majors, and with the young players coming through and the impact they're having, Rahm, Thomas, guys like that, do you feel Rory is that sort of pressure starting to get to him?
I don't think the pressure is getting to him, but I think it is a very important year for him. And I think the putting is turned around because I think he's gotten away from the mechanical look, which is what Faxon is so good at, just showing you how to see the line, start the ball on the line, and just feel your stroke. He went through a lot of periods where he was trying different putting coaches, and he looked very mechanical and very uncomfortable. He doesn't look that way now. Especially yesterday when I was watching him, I thought he looked like he stood over a putt. It felt like he felt like he could make it, and you watching it thought he could make it. And I think that's huge for Rory. Rory's always been able to strike the ball well. I think Rory's in a great place in his life now. He's happy with his wife, his family. Everything's in a good spot. And I really expect him to be one of the ones on Sunday at Augusta with a chance to win. And he's my pick for to win today. I think he's played better than Stenson has. DeChambeau's not a winner. Justin Rose is right there at the top with a good chance. But Rory is the one I'm picking to win this tournament today.
It often feels when you look at somebody like Rory McIlroy this week, where there's such a sudden turnaround in their form on the green, that you wonder, well, why didn't they do this sooner? Why didn't he go to Brad Faxon or somebody else and have that conversation and try and change it? Like, have you seen that a lot during your career as a coach and even still working with some of the best players in the world, that there can be an extreme stubbornness?
Well, I think golfers are very fragile people. I mean, it's a cruel game. You know, if you got 144 player starts, you only have one winner, you got 143 losers, and people say, yeah, well, they still make a lot of money. But for the upper echelon, it's all about winning. That's the whole thing about winning. And I think Rory went through a period of experimenting, trying different coaches with different philosophies, and he got away from what he did well. He always looked like he was comfortable standing over a putt. He always had good speed control. He always had nice release in his stroke. And watching him the last couple of years, the stroke didn't look like Rory McIlroy. What I've seen this week is he looks like Rory again, and you can just see it in his confidence. He gets off to a good start today. He can run the tables.
Butch, it's Dave here. We like to bring up some of the side stories as much as possible in the media, but this is something Rory's actually already referred to himself, and that this is the year that himself, Jordan Spieth and Phil Mickelson are in a race to complete the Grand Slam. You would hope that one or a couple of them will get it done this year, and it'll be interesting to see who is going to get the job done first. How much of a narrative do you think that's going to be in the build-up to the Masters, then, if Rory fails, heading towards the US Open for Phil and then on to the PGA for Spieth?
Well, I think it's a big thing for all three of them. I mean, that's a great accomplishment in golf, the career Grand Slam. There aren't many that have ever done it. You know, I think Phil, having finished second in the U.S. Open six times, is remarkable. And the fact that he's not the best driver in the world, you would think that's the tournament he would struggle in. And yet he's had his chances before. Great win for him down in Mexico, which was fantastic. He hadn't won since the Open in 2013. I think they put a little pressure on themselves. The media doesn't help that because they ask them about it all the time. But, you know, they would tell you if they were being honest, they would say, yeah, I want to win this. And so I do put more pressure on myself. And I think it's going to happen. I think all three of them will get it done. Mickelson, it's going to be 48 in June, is the one that's on the short leash to do it. Rory and Jordan have a great chance. Justin Thomas now has just gone crazy the last 18 months, probably the best player in the world. So I think that these three guys will eventually get it done. I think you might see Rory and Jordan get it done before Phil does, but then Phil's won the Masters three times. He needs to win that U.S. Open. This year it's at Shinnecock, which is an extremely difficult golf course. Rory going to Augusta in a couple weeks has got to feel good about the way he's playing, so it'll happen.
And Nathan's already asked you about Rory and the form that he's clearly showing this week at Bay Hill, and we've mentioned Jordan Spieth, but what was so different for you with the manner in which Phil was playing in Mexico? Why was he able to get the job done after 5 years outside the winner's circle, and what did you see that maybe might point us towards a really special year for Phil?
You know, Phil has worked really hard with his coach, Andrew Gessen. They've worked so hard on his speed to get his speed up where he can drive the ball further. Phil's never been a great driver. He's like Seve. Seve was never a great driver of the ball. Phil is just a very resilient person. He has the ability to bounce back. He has that great ability in his mind that the last shot never happened. Just wherever he hits it, he goes and finds it. He's leading the stats and scrambling stats and putting. He's right up there in the top five and all those important things. And Phil's always been competitive. I mean, look at it this way. Phil Mickelson has won 43 tournaments in five majors in the Tiger Woods era. No one's even come close to doing that. But it surprised me that he hadn't won since the 2013 Open Championship, but he had put himself in position to win. It just shows you, in all honesty, guys, how difficult it is to win a golf tournament these days. There are so many good players. You know, you go back in Nicklaus's days, and there may have been 15 guys that could win a major championship. Now, you tee it up, there's 40 or 50 could win the major championship. So it's difficult to do it. And the older you get, the harder it becomes. But Mickelson, he's fantastic what he's done. He's increased his driving distance. Obviously, his stats and fairways aren't that good, but that's not that big a deal for him because he's always been that way. So I think what he's done is really impressive. But to go back to Rory, I think Rory, there's been so much pressure put on him, especially in your country because he's from Ireland. about what's happened to Rory, why isn't he winning, so on and so forth. He really looks ready to break out. If you watch him, the way he's played today, just watch how he walks. Watch his demeanor on the golf course. And we're seeing a different Rory McIlroy. We're seeing a Rory McIlroy that believes in himself again, believes he can win again. And that's why today's going to be a big day for him.
Yeah, there's not many better sights in golf than Rory when he's strutting down, head up, down the fairway.
Fabulous. I agree.
Just before we let you go then, a couple of other points. Ricky Fowler, I think it was at last year's Masters where you were making the point about the conversation you'd had with Fowler at the end of 2016 about getting rid of those Kardashians. He hasn't had a win in the past year, and he's looking at his mates and somebody like Justin Thomas in particular going and taking his game to another level. As a coach, how do you work that out with him in terms of trying to keep his patience and his focus? Or do you look and do you point out somebody like Justin Thomas and say, you got to let this guy inspire you?
Oh, definitely. I've brought that up. You know me better than that. We have talked about that. We've talked about the fact, you know, if you look at his stats, they're usually better than Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, ball striking and stuff, even putting. You just got to get over the finish line. I mean, Ricky put himself in a great position yesterday when he birdied 16, and then he bogeyed 17 and double bogeyed 18 to push himself back again. He's got to play better on the weekend. Last year at the Masters, I think he was one shot off the lead going to Sunday. He had the best warm-up that he had all week. I mean, he was so positive. And then he went out, and he pushes too hard. And we've seen that with so many players that they want it so badly, especially, like you say, with his good friends winning, and he's happy for them. And, you know, I think what you're going to see with Ricky Fowler is he's going to win a major. Will he win one this year? I actually think he will, but we'll have to wait and see. And when he does, I think you're going to see a whole different Ricky Fowler. I think you're going to see a guy that believes in himself more. He's just got to get out on Sunday and make things happen. And once that happens, then you believe in yourself and then you can go forward.
It's been great talking to you. And we do a golf podcast and we watch every golf tournament. But do you notice that in the past 2-3 months since Tiger's return, that the interest levels in America, the interest levels which our average sports fan have just changed completely towards golf? For all the good work that players like Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson have done, still, there's nothing quite like Tiger.
No, Tiger drives the needle. I mean, we're talking about him today on your show. Everybody talks about him. He's still out. We'll have the biggest gallery today when he tees off in Orlando. And he still has a chance to win. And he thinks he going to win. You know how Tiger feels when he gets it going. His swing looks the best I've seen it in 5-6 years. His body's healthy. He himself has said he has no pain at all, that he can actually practice again. You can see it. He drives the needle. There's no doubt about it. TV ratings, the amount of tickets sold at tournaments. And as you said earlier, it couldn't happen a better time. We're a couple weeks away from the Masters, and Tiger Woods is playing good. It doesn't get any better than that, if you ask me. And then you look at all the former major champions, Stenson, Rory, Rose, Day, Watson, Nicholson, DJ, Thomas, they're all playing well. So you've got going into this Masters, you know, the odds makers can make anybody they want a favorite, but I think you could pick 10 or 12 guys that would have a great chance to win at Augusta.
Who's going to win it?
I wish I knew that. I'd run to the bookie faster than you would. I think this one's going to be hard to call. I think we're going to have to wait to see what happens, And by the way, it was St. Patty's Day here in the U.S. yesterday, so happy St. Patrick's Day. My mother is a McKee, so I've got a lot of Irish blood in me.
Okay, great.
I had my green on all day
yesterday. Very good. Good to hear, Butch, and brilliant as always to talk to you on Off the Ball. Thanks a lot for taking the call.
It's my joy, guys, anytime. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot. Butch Harmon there, the great Butch Harmon.
There we are. I didn't think he liked you, actually. Yeah. I just detected he was thinking...
Wow! Get this
prefer
guy off.
You and Murray.
Oof. Did he listen to the your concert story on the last?
No, he didn't. I was going to tell him, but I.
Joe missed that one, didn't he?
Well, I think if you've missed out on your concert story and my motorbike test story, it's of no major loss.
No. Nathan's story was very good.
Was very good. Dragged up on stage.
Yeah.
It was a happy Mondays. Mondays. Yeah.
That was a brilliant story.
You were 18 or 19, were you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the glory days.
he could be now.
Yeah.
The match play is on in Austin, WGC. Always kind of a strange tournament, this match play. I do wonder if the players value it as much as a stroke event match play.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, I get that impression. It's like the real bottom of the rung, the match play. It's like you can, fluke is the wrong word, but you can somehow nudge your way along in that tournament in a way that you couldn't with stroke play, I feel.
I think they've changed it because of that, right, with this round robin, that you have to play three matches first of all, and then you go into the match play stages.
Okay. To give the big boys a chance to
give,
hang in there.
Yeah, to kind of give the galleries and to...
Because it can... God, man, you can have bad weekends there if everyone's gone home.
Like, I think one year they got rid of... Didn't they? They got rid of most of the top guys, and they were left with a... was it Kevin Chappell and somebody else playing the...
It's the same old conversation, though, around the match play. The problem with match play golf for television is it gets more boring as it goes along.
Yes.
Which is against everything you want from any sport,
less
particularly
golf.
Less golf.
On the course.
And they did... The reason, I guess, they changed was to keep people there for longer, but it does mean you don't have the shocks. You don't have Rory getting beaten in the first round and he's out. You have, Rory will probably win his next two matches.
Can't have everything, Nathan. I'm more than willing to sacrifice the Wednesday and Thursday of shocks if it means we get a good weekend. I'm with them on this one. I think you have to keep the big boys there for the weekend.
Yeah, you have to keep some interest. You have to watch, you know, decent golf and but match play is difficult because it's very difficult to televise it, you know, because it's going to take 4 hours.
Yeah.
And you're watching two guys play.
Yeah.
What do you put in between it? Like, at least with tournament golf.
Verity.
Yeah.
Mostly talking.
I have to admit, though, and I slagged off Sky a few weeks ago. The Sky coverage was much better on Saturday and Sunday this week of Bay Hill. It was far better.
Any reason in particular?
I don't know. They seem to show a whole lot more golf.
I think, though, they're at the mercy of what American TV are doing, aren't they?
Like, they definitely showed.
The worst part on Sky's coverage is when Golf Channel seem to go off air and there's like a 40-minute break.
Oh, the half an hour break.
Half hour break until NBC, come on. And like it's they're just they don't Sky don't know what they're gonna get. They might get one shot of Kevin Chappell in the fairway, and that might be it for 10 minutes.
Yeah, but we're heading towards a period. I presume they're gonna have their full staff
out there.
Out
but
there.
That's you know that's when Room to Improve comes into its own around that time.
I think
that
Room to Improve the series must be wrapping up soon, Joe.
No,
but if it's on the same night as the final round of the Masters,
well, obviously I'm gonna watch the Masters.
I
unless,
are you less friendly to your partner in match play?
Yes. Most definitely.
Right.
Most definitely.
A lot less talk. Okay.
Because you know it's only me and you. It would be like a bit like a playoff situation. You know, you're walking up the ferry, you don't really want to chat, you just want to get the job done and away you go.
Yeah. Less enjoyable, therefore?
No, not really. Not really.
You're a mean type.
I'm just competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were your juices flowing a bit more in match play than they might be?
I literally played none. Well, apart from amateur golf,
right?
You know what I mean.
There's a tradition here of match play in Irish amateur golf, isn't there?
Oh, unbelievable!
Yeah. The Carrington you feel was kind of forged in that environment.
Correct.
But for so long, that was given as the reason that we had such success on the European Tour, particularly during that golden era when you were winning tournaments and we had so many players. Was that from such a young age? It was win or nothing.
Yeah,
you were under pressure.
It was just bet into you.
Yeah,
I remember playing
on tough courses.
I remember playing up the north and they played against a guy and I was probably 16 or 17, carried my bag around 17 holes, won on the 17, never said a word, you know, in the match. And he had his buddies with him and, you know, they had a few beers and whatever else and I was getting, you know, it was kind of an intimidating situation.
Sure, yeah.
But I just didn't say a word. And then he complained about me later on for unsportsmanlike behaviour. I looked at him and went, wow. So match play can be, you know, as Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed would say, you know, you can put a few things into it that are not like stroke play where you can maybe, I wouldn't say niggle, but say, you know, you could use some kind of, you know, you can use your experience a whole lot more in match play.
What are the tricks of the trade? Obviously not conceding a putt jumps to mind to me, but can you be slow? Can you...
A few people can try that trick, all right, yeah. Being slow, you know, walking fast or, you know, getting to their ball early, you know, or, like you said, not giving putts. But really, you know, all else is, you know, if you want to try that kind of tricksmanship, you know, really are you, is it on the etiquette of the game?
Sometimes you watch it and I don't know if it's deliberate or not, the TV commentary can make assumptions, but someone might... off the tee lay up 10 yards short of their opponent's ball, so they'll go first into the green to really put the pressure on them. I don't know, is that a calculation you'd ever make in the tee? I just would have thought you'd hit it as far as you can.
I think you try and play the hole out as best you can.
So sometimes you might say, I want to go into the green first here. Would you?
Not really. Not really. Not okay. really. Doesn't,
you they know. Talk about that on the TV a lot.
Yeah, but they're trying to pump it up and they're trying to do they're trying to do something, you know what I mean, right, on okay. commentary-wise, rather than make something out of it that's not, there's nothing there.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe we should turn our Golf Weekly Day into a match play event.
Would that be a good idea?
It'd take a long time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, no then.
How many days have we got?
Well, what time will we start that? Two?
Half one-ish, half two.
Half oh, no,
two.
Earlier than that. No, no, no. Half really? 12. Half 12, shocking.
Okay. Right, well, don't enter unless you can be there for 12. Yeah. Actually, the short game facilities at Lutterstown are genuinely great.
Fantastic,
so
yeah.
It actually is worth getting yeah. there at half 11, 12. Any final thoughts, or are we pretty much done?
No, I'm excited.
Yeah, golf's good.
I have to mention one thing.
Right.
Right.
Here we go.
No, no, don't
Who's
give me that
off
one.
Now?
No, nobody's pissed me off. Laura Davis.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we have to mention that.
Limping up the fairway.
54 years of age yeah. to finish second in a ladies' tournament where, the, you know, her opponent was 20-odd, isn't she?
Yeah.
You know, fantastic performance.
What happened in the back nine? I watched it up until the back nine and she was one off the lead. And then when I woke up in the morning, she'd been beaten by five.
I didn't see it. Now, to be honest with you, I just saw the result and I said, you know, coming in here, we got to mention, because there's probably a lot of, you know, lady listeners out there who like golf and who are big into the lady scene.
Yeah,
I love watching women's golf. I'll say it all the time.
I prefer watching the women's golf.
For a 54-year-old. Like, imagine if who, name me a 54-year-old.
Well, she's only 5 years younger than Tom Watson when he did his thing yeah. at Turnberry, which was kind of...
There you go.
Celebrated. I do much prefer, like, I was watching Laura Davis and she was, you know, she's hitting driver and she was carrying the ball about 245, 250. And I kind of thought, you know, on a good day, I can relate to this.
Yeah.
This is kind of how I would try and go about my business on a golf course. Obviously, they're a billion times better and everything. But in some ways, it is nice to watch them maneuver that their way around in a way that Dustin Johnson doesn't have to. Bit more brain.
It's realistic.
On. Yeah. Yeah. Dustin Johnson ain't using his brain a whole lot sometimes, especially on a bad PGA tour.
I have to. Well, shall I ask this question?
Don't.
Okay.
Don't do that. Well, we should try and get Laura Davis on. Like, bit of a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We are pretty much done. Peter, thank you.
Thank you.
Look forward to Lutterstown. That's always a great day. Get your entries in early, Golf Weekly listeners, and say something nice about Nathan, which increases your odds exponentially. That's us done. We'll see you next week. Look. Lovely.
Starter kid right here.